So our next presentation will be with maize and in Africa. So Casa Semen.
My name is Casa Semen. I work as a maize molecular breeder at the International Maize Improvement Center. I'm going to talk about QTL mapping and molecular breeding for developing drought-tolerant maize in sub-Saharan Africa. And this is a joint presentation with several colleagues, and two of the colleagues are Dr. Pasana is sitting there, and Dr. Warburton also is sitting here. So if there are any difficult questions, then I'll forward the question to them. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about three different things. I'm going to talk about QTL mapping, specifically for drought tolerance, and also drought tolerance alone is not going to work unless we integrate drought tolerance with some major diseases. And since we have a lot of activities on maize streak virus, I'm going to also talk about on maize streak virus QTL mapping and deployment. And then finally, I'll talk about the marker assisted recurrence selection, which is one of the molecular breeding methods in Africa. And to start with, for CMET, we have a wide range of germplasm. And if you look at the slides on here, you can see the susceptible ones against resistance ones that's under drought, under managed drought condition. And if you look the grain that you harvest from those types of lines, if it's a resistant line, you can still harvest yield here. And this is hybrid and grain yield under drought, and this is under optimum, which is world weather condition. And if you look for line evaluation, these are like lines which are highly susceptible, whether these ones are still resistant. So, but if you develop drought tolerant alone without integrating some major disease like maize streak virus resistance, is not going to work. So that's why we have also ongoing projects on maize streak virus resistance, fine mapping and validation. Now we are at the deployment stage for a pilot project. And if you look here, you can see the resistance one, MSV resistant one, and also the susceptible ones. Since we have a wide range of germplasm, the whole result that I'm going to talk about is based on the germplasm that is available with the CMET breeding programs. With regard to the QTL mapping component, we have a wide range of traits that we are working on, but I'm only talking about the drought aspect, plus the maize streak virus that I mentioned aspect. And we are using two my methods for mapping, both the linkage-based QTL mapping in biparental populations, and also genome-wide association mapping components here. For the linkage-based QTL mapping, we have developed several populations, but now we have analyzed the data and published one paper that utilizes the data of 18 biparental population, which is a total of over 3,000 samples. Now, here what we want to do is to look if there are major QTLs across different genetic backgrounds. Since we have 18 biparental population, we want to see whether there are some major QTLs which are detected across different genetic backgrounds. And for this purpose, each population was genotyped up to 4 managed water stress and up to 4 managed well water conditions here. If you look at the heritability here, the heritability under drought for grain yield, now we evaluated the population for 17 different traits, but I'm going to present only on the results for grain yield under drought, grain yield under well water condition, and also anti-seismic interval. And if you look, the heritability for under drought for the two traits is much lower than the heritability under optimum condition. And we did QTL mapping for a single population across 18 population, and the number of QTLs that we detect for grain yield were about 101 QTL for grain yield and about 82 for anti-seismic interval. And out of 101 QTL, about 18 QTL were detected for grain yield under drought condition, whereas the remaining ones, about the majority of one, were under only optimum conditions. And for the same is true for the anti-seismic interval. We have about 82 QTLs. Out of these, 33 were detected under drought conditions. And the total phenotypic variance explained by each QTL, it's highly variable. It ranges from somewhere around 1 to 19% for grain yield and between 0.1 to 70% for anti-seismic, and the average was around 7.1%. If you look the phenotype, the frequency distribution of the QTL, so 183 QTL for the two traits across R-square values, you'll see the majority of them are less than 10%. And there are some QTLs which are around 18, 15% here. And now the plot on the right side is just an example of how the KTLs are mapped across the maize chromosome. This is an example that I pick chromosome 1. And if you look, you'll find a lot of clusters of KTLs there. One bar represents one KTL, and then the letters represent the trait that we're going. Now the question is, are these, let's say, if you take the one I have highlighted here on the red here, are all those clusters of KTLs, one KTL or a number of KTLs there? That's what we want to answer using meta-analysis. We did a KTL meta-analysis across this 18 population to narrow down the number of KTLs and also narrow down the confidence interval. And the meta-analysis reduced the number of KTLs from 183 to 68 meta-KTLs, which is a reduction by 68%. And also it narrowed down the confidence interval by 12-fold. And the average phenotypic variance explained by each meta-KTL ranges between 1.2 to 13%. So out of these 68 meta-KTLs, 9 of them seem to be more promising, and they can be considered because they were detected at least in 4 to 6 different populations. They were detected across different genetic backgrounds. But we did not find any KTL which was detected in more than 6 different backgrounds. Now, among the 9 KTLs, 4 of them are much better because they have much narrow confidence interval, and they were also detected between 4 to 6 population here. And this slide shows you where the different meta-KTLs are. The black bars here, like this is one of the meta-KTLs, this is another meta-KTL, and so on. The black ones are KTL, which are detected for ASI and grain yield, whereas the green ones are KTL for grain yield only, and the pink ones are KTL for anti-silking interval. So out of these ones, we are only trying to focus on four of them. The one I mentioned, one of these is here. And then there is another one here, and there is another one. And now we are planning to go further for these four meta-KTLs. And because we have additional data set I'm going to talk about. We also have association mapping, DTM, drought-tolerant maize population for association genome-wide association mapping. And the panel consists of about 280 lines, and diverse CMET lines. And these lines were genotyped in line locations across different countries, and also genotyped by 55K and also genotyped by sequencing. And this is a slide from my colleague, Raman Babu. He summarizes the results, and he came up with 8 genomic regions which are associated with grain yield under drought and optimum conditions. And the R-squared values are somewhere the same as like what we observed in the biparental population, somewhere between 4.1 to 10 to 11% here. And these regions were detected irrespective of the mapping algorithm, whether you are using the mixed linear model or the general linear model here. Now, he also go further to validate this one using the biparental population. As I mentioned, these are the biparental populations that I mentioned, the one used for the meta-KTL analysis here, and also three populations here. These are three populations, are 18 populations. So if you look, these KTLs which are detected using GWAS method, they were validated across 18 populations that I talked about, and also most of them are also in the three populations, so which means that we have still more confidence to consider this one for further use. So what we have now, what's the way forward for the meta-analysis and also the GWAS on grain yield and ASI for drought? We want to go more for more detail for the four KTLs that I meta-KTLs that I mentioned, because we have phenotype and genotype data for 20 additional populations that were generated as part of two ongoing projects, the drought tolerant maize for Africa and the water efficient maize for Africa project. And now we are also trying to assemble a number of markers which are associated with the different KTLs and come up with a number of markers somewhere between 50 to 100 that can be used to improve some of the lineages using the F2 enrichment approach. Now, the other component is the maize streak virus resistance. Maize streak virus resistance is much simpler than the drought tolerant, because you see here you find a major QTL which explains somewhere between 20 to 67% of the phenotypic variance for resistance. So this was a result based on 3 biparental population, and we also run association mapping panel, the same association mapping panel, evaluated also in different environments here. Now, when you look that QTL that located on chromosome 1, and this is a genetic interval, and also this is a physical interval here. And the disease score for MSV1 is scored 1 to 5 scale, where 1 is resistant and 5 is susceptible. And if you scale that one and see the contribution of this QTL contributes about 1.2% of out of between 1 to 5 range. And this is the plot here, the resistance and the susceptible and the resistant genotypes here. Now, my colleague, Sudan Nair, has came up with three SNPs which are associated with this QTL. And using these three SNPs, he evaluated using 166 independent lines, which are assigned into the resistant and susceptible haplotypes, and then taken into the field to see whether the marker prediction is accurate or not. So the marker prediction, accuracy of the marker prediction is about 90%. Some lines, the one I have highlighted here in red, those are misclassification based on the marker data. They were all assigned as a resistant, but three of them were found to be susceptible. If you take here, 10 lines were assigned as susceptible, but eight of them were grouped as resistant. So there are some misclassification. That's why the accuracy is about 90% here. Now, using these three markers, we have started a pilot deployment strategy to introduce the MSV1 QTL across the drought-tolerant lines using two approaches. One is a F2 enrichment approach, and the other one is a backcrossing approach. For the F2 enrichment approach, we have already started converting that five different populations. Now, the first activity is converting the drought-tolerant lines for MSV resistant. And then the deployment strategy in biparental, we have five populations. And the five populations were genotyping using the three SNP markers, which are fine mapped and validated. Now, this is just an example for two populations here. We have a population which is about 360 lines, individual in every population is one of the population. This is the second population. Based on the three markers, we assign the lines into the individuals into a resistant and susceptible one. This is a resistant one, and this is a susceptible haplotype or a genotype, and these are the heterozygotes. Now you have discarded the susceptible genotypes, and now carry forward the homozygous resistant ones and the heterozygous ones, and submit it for double haploid production. And now we think that the double haploid will facilitate the development of the fixed lines within about a year here. The other aspect I want to talk about is the marker-assisted recurrent selection. We have two ongoing projects with a very large component of marker-assisted recurrent selection. We developed over 40 different populations, but out of this one, we discarded some of them because of the quality issue. We have a total of 34 mass population, which are genotyped and phenotyped across several locations here. And then based on this one, we did the selection and reached to a different cycle. This is the workflow of a mass. It's a very long workflow I'm not going to talk about. The only thing I can say here is it takes at least 6 years to complete from selection of the parents until you get cycle three here. It takes at least 6 years. And if that works, if everything goes smoothly as planned. And also now we have the MALT protocol on this one, different cycle, one cycle of marker selection, two and three times of selection. And also we also advanced some of the population using phenotypic selection of the pedix selection and to make a comparison assay for the genetic gain studies. Now here is just the workflow. The most critical component in marker-assisted recurrent selection is the planning phase and the data turnaround time, and the data analysis, and finally synchronization and pollination. These are very critical. If you miss one of these, then you'll miss the whole cycle or the whole season. So for genotyping, we use two different platforms. We use the Monsanto protocol because Monsanto is our partner for one of the projects. And for one of the projects, we use the service providers like LGS Genomics or the K Bioscience from UK. Now, they have a uniplex assay. The cost is slightly expensive compared to the multiplex assay or the GBAs, but the data turnaround is much more efficient than the other platforms. Now, here we are considering the cost aspect, the data turnaround, and reliability for calling the heterozygous because it's a breeding population here. So now we have a number of populations. We have already reached cycle three, which is the last step for marker-assisted recurrent selection. And this is the outline of the for the genetic gain studies. Now we took a bulk of the cycle zero, which is the base population, cycle one, which is one marker only selection, two cycles and three cycles, and also parampara the line or the pedigree breeding here. And then this bulk were crossed with a single line tester, with a single cross tester. And then also we use the best commercial checks. And this slide from my colleague, Josef Bayene, shows a summary of the nine mass populations. And the different lines here, cycle zero, which is the base population, and cycle three after three, and this is the base commercial check available in the region here. So if you compare here, the black bar and the rest here, you can see this is only grain yield under optimum. We are still waiting for the data for grain yield under drought conditions. So hopefully we'll get by the end of next month, and probably we'll come up with the final results by January, February. And this is only three locations, three grain yield under three locations, it's optimum. So you can obviously see a genetic gain using MARS than the conventional, or the base population. And the gain is much better than the best commercial check which are available in the region. And this is in comparing the pedigree selection and the cycle three. We have only one set at the moment. We are still harvesting the remaining ones. Again, when you compare the pedigree with MARS, the MARS seems better than the pedigree selection, but still we need to have more data to confirm that. And this is comparing three different cycles, so it's the genomic selection, again as a MARS. Now here, the genomic selection I'm talking about, each population was genotyped up to 400 SNP markers. Now for the MARS, we have two protocols. One of the protocol uses a subset of markers which are associated with specific ETS. So selection was based on subset of markers which were significant associated with grain yield and some other adaptive traits. And when I say genomic selection, I'm referring here using all markers instead of selecting the subset of significant markers which are associated with QTS. So here you don't see really difference between. This is only limited at three sites. Again, it's only optimum or well water condition. You don't really see much genetic gain by using more markers than a subset of significant markers. But still we have to wait for additional data from under drought condition and in order to really comfortably say whether it has made a change or not. So now to wind up my presentation here, the QTL meta-analysis, as I mentioned, it has reduced the number of QTL by 68%. It also narrowed down the confidence interval by up to 12-fold in some cases. And there are few QTL which explain between 3 to 10% of the phenotypic variance under water stress condition and under water condition. And they also, these QTL were also detected under multiple genetic, up to 6 genetic background, and may be taken into forward for other purposes. It may be difficult for QTL hunt, but hopefully this one, if you target several regions across the maize chromosomes, then it is possible to make genetic gain using F2 enrichment approach. For MSV1, it is straightforward because there is a major QTL, and introducing that major QTL into a drought tolerant lines will be one of the most important area to consider. And also preliminary results from the genetic gain studies for MARS also shows encouraging results, but the result needs to be validated or verified when we have the final data for under drought conditions. So I would like to acknowledge a number of colleagues, including Monsanto, for genotyping in one of the projects and also the donors here. And I think I'll stop here and leave the floor for discussion. Thank you very much.
Minutes for questions or discussion?
You used in your initial population that we had a bit of a lot of them, like around, we had 174 individual progeny or recombinant progeny.
Yeah, the number of individuals vary from population to population, but the average, the 171 is average.
My question deals with that. There's a well-known selective bias, or known in the plant world, is Beavis effect. We tremendously overestimate the effect of the gene, a small effect. Yeah. Is that shown out later if you've done some of these other studies?
That overestimation is always a problem in QTL mapping, and that has even been reported when people were using up to 1,000 lines. There was a paper in 2002. Israel. So that is still a possibility, but when you look across 18 population, the effect remains more or less stable because the effect remains within the acceptable range. You want?
So, context specificity doesn't arise because we have a large set of phenotyping network locations from where the data has been derived. So, practically, these QTLs are highly working across environments.
Any other questions or comments?
Basically, the genomic selection that I referred here is selection using all markers. Let's say you have population one, which is genotype, let's say with 400 markers. So one of the options is you calculate the genomic estimated breeding values using 400 markers and rank the individuals according to the GBV values and take, let's say, 10% selection. Let's say you take the top 10%. That's still like the genomic selection. With a MARST approach, what we did was we developed an index and then selection using significant markers only. And those significant markers vary from population to population. The range is between 30 to 70 markers within a given population. So instead of 400, either 30 or 40 or 50 markers. Or less. Yeah.
I guess my question is, why do you think there's you would expect that the genomics are going to capture more?
Yeah, well, in principle, yes, but now I do not know why. Maybe we have to wait for additional data because we are still waiting for harvest, for the trials and the droughts, and probably we need to figure out why. But I, at this stage, I don't really have a good... Susanna, do you have anything to say?
We are also doing a much larger study in Latin America, where Shai Chan and colleagues are doing that, where we are testing the transects of markers, sometimes exceeding 30,000, 50,000 markers, to much smaller sets, trying to accept on what's the ideal population size and what's the ideal number of markers undertaking genomic selection. But so far, the results show that GS is working very well, and if it is a close, we make a training and test the populations. Whereas for more unrelated populations, it's not really working. But the prediction characteristics are much, much lower.
And that will thank CASA again.